Godspeed with Carol and Michael Hollenbach, Sundays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom. In an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace, I'm your host, Carol Hollenbach. Reverend Dr. Susan Stone Street is pastor of the United Christian Church in Lincolnville, Maine. The parish is affiliated with the United Church of Christ, and all faiths are welcome. The town of Lincolnville celebrated its bicentennial in 2002, and the parish is nearly as old as the town. This is an old New England church, crisp and clean and open, with a plaque by the door that reads, "Bidden or not bidden, God is present." Susan was ordained in the United Church of Christ in 1999. She holds a Master of Divinity and Doctor of Ministry degree from Bangor Theological Seminary in Bangor, Maine. She also holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in American Studies and a Master of Science in Personnel Counseling from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. Susan, welcome to the Institute.
Thanks so much, Carol.
I imagine the personnel counseling might come in handy as clergy.
Yes, it does.
Well, you have a very interesting journey of faith, personally and professionally, and I think some people might be able to relate.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, so let's start off with whether you were raised in a specific tradition or did you come to faith as an adult?
Thanks, Carol. I would have to say I came to faith as an adult, and really not until my mid-40s. When I was growing up in Silver Spring, Maryland, my parents were members of Foundry United Methodist Church in downtown Washington, D.C. for a few years, and we did go to church, but I didn't go to Sunday school, and I had no other religious instruction. We weren't involved in the church beyond attending worship services on Sunday mornings. And we didn't talk about religion or the Bible at home while I was growing up. I'm not even sure we had one in the house. I can't remember. But my parents were very fine people who raised me to live by the golden rule, even though that rule was really unstated in any formal way. And I didn't know the golden rule originated from the Bible and other sacred scriptures until I began seminary. But it was it wasn't until shortly before my parents' deaths in 1991 and 93 that things really began to change in my life, and with their deaths, my life really turned around from being a very secular one to a life filled with spirit, which eventually led me to beginning seminary at Bangor Theological Seminary in 1995.
Thank you very much. For that answer. Now, the decision to become a minister,
mm-hmm.
obviously a very life-changing time,
yep,
and for you.
Mm-hmm.
Your previous career, it's to imagine that you were a certified financial planner,
yes,
with American Express for 15 years.
Yes, I was, for 15 years.
Sort of a polar opposite almost from where you found yourself being led after a life-changing kind of transitional time in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Could you share with our listeners, because I think people can really relate to, you know, this yearning you may have experienced.
Well, it was interesting because it was while I was still working as a financial planner in Bradenton, Florida, and I remember as I've looked back at it years now later, my secretary at the time said to me one day, and this would have been in the mid-80s, she said, "Susan, faith is just a matter of paying attention." Now, we didn't talk about religion because she knew I wasn't a churchgoer. She was and still is Roman Catholic. And it was just an offhand comment one day. But it really began to become clear very quickly several years after that things were going to change. My parents' health changed dramatically over a couple of years, and some other things happened. And I have to say, I began to pay attention. And occurrences that I might have called coincidences before that time, I began to see a sign that my life was going to change in a major way. I had an opportunity to go to Russia for 12 days to do some community service, which very much changed my perspective on life. I had a very dear friend in her mid-90s who I became very close to, who was a very much of a faithful person. And some other things happened, too, but everything just started to fall into place, and I couldn't not pay attention.
Yeah, I can relate to that. During the mid-80s, some experiences in my life as well caused me to sort of stop looking at the horizon and to start looking now to the ground and the path I was walking on.
Yes.
And re-examine things.
Yeah.
So now then, you were drawn to the UCC, the United Church of Christ.
Yeah.
Now, you're still in Florida?
Well, I was, and it's interesting, I didn't become involved with the UCC in Florida, but two very good lifelong women friends of my mother's, who had been living as a couple for over 40 years, attended the UCC Church in Hyattsville, Maryland, and these two women had known me since I was born, and I didn't really know anything about the UCC, but when I began to see what was occurring in my life, I got in touch with them, and they just said, yes, they belong to this UCC church, and it was very open and affirming and welcoming, and so it just kind of planted a seed for me. Other than that, we didn't talk about religion because they knew, too, I hadn't been doing anything with religion or church in the first half of my life. But
right.
That's how I first heard about the UCC was from my mother's friends who had been together as a couple, two women, for 40 years.
Mm. Lifelong,
lifelong
relationship.
Yep.
Now let's tell us about talk to us about the UCC, some history of the United Church of Christ. Where does it begin?
Okay, well, the United Church of Christ as a denomination, the UCC, came into being in 1957 with the union of two Protestant denominations. It's a very interesting history that goes way back to the 1600s. The Evangelical and Reformed Church and the Congregational Christian Churches came together, and each of these was in turn the result of a union of two earlier denominations. So
right.
the Congregational Churches were organized when the Pilgrims of Plymouth Plantation in 1620 and the Puritans of the Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1629 acknowledged their essential unity in what was called the Cambridge Platform of 1648. I believe you interviewed Arthur Rauner not too long ago, and he talked with you about the Congregational Churches.
Yes, specifically.
Yeah.
And that history, yes.
Yep. And then the Reformed Church in the United States traces its beginnings to congregations of German settlers in Pennsylvania from about 1725 on, and then later its ranks swelled with Reformed folks from Switzerland and other countries. But then the other arm was the Christian churches, which sprang up in the late 1700s and early 1800s in reaction, this is interesting to me, in reaction to the theological and organizational, what was known as the rigidity of the Methodist and Presbyterian and Baptist churches of that time. And then the Evangelical Synod of North America traced its beginnings to an association of German evangelical pastors in Missouri, and that was around 1840. So through the years, members of many other groups also, such as Native Americans, African Americans, Asian Americans, some Volga Germans, Armenians, Hungarians, Hispanic Americans have all joined with these groups to become part of the UCC. So we have a very wide variety of traditions within the common life of the UCC.
Now, what do you think transpired that formed this union in 1957? What caused this union to happen?
Well, I think the time was ripe. It was ripe for these groups that were distinct themselves, but were seeing some common elements in their worship, in their wanting to do important and faithful work in the world, and it all transpired. It was very complicated. It took some time. I wasn't there and involved in all of that, but there are several history books that have been written about all of that, and I'm happy to. And if your listeners, we'll talk about the website for the UCC, but all of that history
sure.
is very well put down into some very fine writing about how that all came about.
Oh, sure. That would be helpful later,
in the
program. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
So the UCC, 1957, we have Elvis and the UCC emerging here. The church is national?
Yes.
Or international?
Well, actually international. I know there are churches in Puerto Rico, and there are relationships with other denominations and other religious faiths around the world, which we can talk about later, but there's a lot of connections around the world. The UCC is involved in a lot of very major efforts with other denominations and other faith groups.
Yes, I'm planning to ask you that.
Yeah.
We can discuss it now if you like.
Well, we can actually, there's some other things probably ought to come first before that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any key figures involved in the development of the UCC?
Yeah, there are. It's interesting. The UCC in its denominational roots has a number of firsts in history. certainly didn't know any of this when I started seminary, but I learned a lot about it after that. First mainline church to take a stand against slavery, that was in the 1700s. The first church to ordain an African-American person in 1785. The first to ordain a woman, that was the Reverend Antoinette Brown in 1853. The first in foreign missions in 1810. And the first to ordain an openly gay person in 1972, the Reverend William Johnson.
Wow.
So a lot of firsts.
Yes, there are.
Yeah.
And we'll get into this as well, because these are important traits, I think, to explore.
Mm-hmm.
So then what would you say is at the center of UCC life? And you can, you know, take your time.
Yeah, I think for individuals who are part of a UCC congregation, I think the center is the congregation. There is no hierarchy of church authority beyond the local church in the UCC, and the UCC is very distinctive in this. Each congregation determines how it will govern itself and how it will live out the basic principles of the denomination. That's called congregational polity or governance. So what that means is that no one from on high, so to speak, can tell any particular UCC church how it will organize its affairs or how it will conduct its business, worship services, its practices, its work in the community. Each church is its own entity, and that's pretty basic to UCC life.
So that your parish in Lincolnville decides for itself.
Yep. We have our own constitution, our own bylaws, and the denomination, and we are part of the main conference of the UCC, both the denomination and the conference can suggest to us things to do. They can, our constitution for the UCC, for the denomination, the UCC can say, you may want to, or we suggest, but there's no hierarchy where someone beyond our local church can tell us what to do. And in New England, we kind of like it that way.
Now then, your role in that as pastor, how does that work then? Is it more supporting the congregation and what the congregation would like to do or decides?
It is really, and several years ago, I've been here now over a little bit over 12 years, and it became very clear to me that if we tried to take a vote in a board meeting as to whether we would, our church would support XYZ cause, that it was much better if we said to the members of our congregation, here are some things that are available for us to do, either as a project or something to support, and we invite any of you who would like to support this particular event or justice issue. So that we've discovered that it's much better if we give opportunities and ask individual members how they would like to be involved, rather than to say, our church is going to do X. And we get a lot more support for things that way. It goes back to that UCC, the root of being both responsible, but also to have the freedom. Each member has the individual freedom to decide which of the projects or causes that we would like to foster that they'll support.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, as a Christian church, essentially, the literature would be the same, scriptures would be the same as other Christian churches. And you know, in America, I've learned that there are over 2,500 denominations, as it were, registered as Christian churches. Over here, and I love to quote another minister, Dewey Fogerberg, who says, never has there been more division in the name of God's reconciling love.
Yes. Dewey's a member of that church in Lincolnville, yes.
So I would like, you know, to speak what is unique to the UCC.
Okay.
And what would distinguish it from other churches, for example, you were beginning to mention before, the social beliefs or perspectives.
Yep. Yeah,
would
and
you
actually,
share
there are six very specific social beliefs or perspectives, if you want to call them that are unique to the UCC, and they're all important to me. A couple are more important than others, but I'll talk about each one of them.
Yeah.
First, it goes from a scriptural reference from John chapter 17, verse 21, the words, that they may all be one. And that is the motto of the UCC. And those words reflect the spirit of unity on which the church is based and point towards future efforts to heal those divisions that Dewey might be talking about in the body of Christ. The UCC is a uniting church as well as a united church, knowing that full well there are bumps along the road. We're all human, and we don't always agree about everything. So we are both united and uniting.
Okay.
Second.
And the kind of divisions that you would be focusing on healing might include?
Oh, gosh. Everything from differing views about what's going on in the political world, what matters we should be supporting locally, issues of how we read the scriptures, issues of the hot topic for so many denominations now is the issue of how do we deal with different sexual orientations, you know, whether to support or not. Obviously, with having ordained the first gay man in 1972, that's little less of a hot topic than it is in some other denominations.
Right.
But we try to continue to realize, yes, we're united, but we are also uniting. Meaning, it's an ongoing process. It's a verb, not a noun. So
yes,
we
yes.
keep on working with that. But
yes.
in the second principle that it's really important to me, in essentials unity, in non-essentials diversity, in all things charity. That's a really important thought. In essentials unity. In
yes.
non-essentials, diversity, in all things, charity.
Okay.
So that the unity that the UCC seeks requires, it doesn't require an uncritical acceptance of any point of view, and it doesn't require a rigid formulation of doctrine. What it does require is a mutual understanding and an agreement as to which aspects of the Christian faith and life are essential. We do celebrate
right.
the two sacraments of baptism and the Eucharist, the Holy Communion. And within the denomination, the unity of the church is not of its own making. It is a gift of God. We do foresee Jesus Christ as the head of the UCC. But expressions of the unity are very diverse. They are as diverse as the individual churches and the individual members of each of those churches. The common thread...
And what you would consider, let's say, non-essentials might include some
would be,
things such as...
The various different kinds of... statements of faith that various people might follow. One church might follow Apostles' Creed, Nicene Creed, another church might not at all. We have a statement of faith in the UCC, which most of, I would think, probably all of the UCC churches do say and do follow, but you don't have to. You don't have to.
Right.
That's another one
essential.
of the principles of the church is that there's a focus on testimonies of faith rather than tests of faith.
Yes.
And that's really important to me, too,
huh.
Because we do believe faith is expressed in many different ways, and the UCC has no formula that is set as a test of faith. We certainly recognize and respect those from history, but the denomination does not require that each Sunday, you know, I make sure that we say a particular creed, that
yes.
We don't do that.
Right, or otherwise you'd be in trouble. Or
well,
miss.
You know, yeah,
yes.
it would. Considering how why people are involved in our church, they, for many of them, one of the reasons they're with us is that they don't want to say those creeds. They've come from other denominations where they couldn't, in honesty and in truth to themselves, say them. So we don't. It's not required as part of our denomination.
Right. Thank you.
So I guess another one of the principles that are really important to us is the philosophy that there is still more light and truth to break forth from God's holy word. Yes, the Bible is the primary holy book that we use or make reference to, and it's foundational. But the UCC believes, as one of the bylines in the last few years, God is still speaking. It declares that the study of Scripture is not limited by past
yeah.
interpretations, but is to be pursued with expectancy every day for new insights and help with living.
So revelation continues.
It continues. From the Hebrew Scriptures, God will do a new thing, and I certainly believe that, and I believe all the members of our congregation certainly do. God is continually working in the world.
Now, were there any other principles?
Yeah,
another
one that's really important is that all members of the UCC are called to minister to others and to participate as equals in the worship of God. Certainly there are those of us who are recognized as ordained ministers, but my job is not to do the work of ministry for the members of the church. My task is to guide and instruct and to enable all the folks in the church to do the work of ministry. It's not all about me. It's all about all of us doing the work that we believe Jesus calls us to do. And the last principle that's also very important to me is that individual members of the UCC are free to believe and act in accordance with their perceptions of God's will for their lives. Each person is called to live in a loving and covenantal relationship with one another, and each congregation is free to act in accordance with the decisions of its members, guided by the working of the Spirit, we hope, in the light of the Scriptures. And that's just really, really important. And we'd really try to keep that central, that, yes, we come together to accomplish things, but we each have our own consciences that we need to really be reflecting with God through the life and teachings of Jesus.
Mm, thank you very much. Mm. For that answer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Let's go back now, because you mentioned justice.
Yes.
A while back, as well as the social beliefs. Can we speak a little bit to what is vital in terms of the United Church of Christ involvement in justice issues and
okay.
And societal improvement.
The UCC has really become known as a denomination that's very, very focused on justice issues around the world, not just in the U.S. And it's they are extremely important. It'll come right back to me here in a second. The Justice Witness Ministries of the UCC are involved on civil and human rights, peacemaking, justice for women, justice for children, sexuality education, racial justice, environmental justice. There's a new movement right at the moment that's come about that I just found out about this week. Center of Education and Social Transformation that will be working with environmental issues in this country and around the world, and that's a new aspect of ministry. but the working with racial justice. With our various partners involved with economic justice has been going on for a long, long time, and not just within the UCC, but with other churches and with other faith groups around the world.
So the UCC, I mean, is involved mm-hmm. In politics. Politically motivated, locally, globally, as part of ministry. Would you say that's accurate?
I would say I think I would put that politics with a small p.
Yes.
Jesus was a very political person in his life and through to his death. And if you would say that caring for widows and orphans, as we are called to do in both the Hebrew Scriptures and the New Testament, if you call that politics, then yes, I would say we're involved in politics, because that's the bottom line of Scriptures and I think of a life of faith, is how are we treating those who are not at the table?
Yes, very important statement. Thank you for sharing that, because there are different, denominations that feel differently about what it is we're called and responsible to do. So thank you for sharing that. Are there any misconceptions regarding UCC?
Well, that's interesting. I think I've thought about that a lot this week. I think most people would recognize the UCC as one of the most progressive Protestant denominations, and as we were just saying, having become very consciously known as social justice and equality issues are in the forefront of what we do. There are many ordained women pastors in the UCC. There are some gay and lesbian and transgendered ordained pastors. There's a strong focus on providing support and energy, as I mentioned, towards racial justice and immigrant equality and environmental well-being. And I suppose some may have some misconceptions about all of that, believing that the UCC does not follow a literal interpretation of the Scriptures and steps beyond the bounds of more traditional Christian practices. And I think that's all very true, and I think that does produce maybe some misconceptions about the UCC, that we're doing things that, if you do a literal reading of the Bible, might say, one person might say, or many people might say, well, that's not what the Bible says. Well, it does. It just depends on which parts of the Bible you want to use for your proof texting.
Yes, and of course that's something that comes up frequently, which is, taking this taking scripture
mm-hmm.
and sort of picking and choosing and
yes.
putting spin on things to
yep.
support, you
yep.
know, our own particular point of view.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about love one another mm-hmm. and we also talk about love your enemy,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As you said, it's there are many, not just outcast, but downtrodden
mm-hmm.
folks in
Absolutely.
The world. And it's, yeah. you know, it, in many ways not getting better.
Yeah.
Things
yeah.
are getting more polarized.
Yep.
And do you find that the UCC is at all, have you know, persecuted at all? Or have you found, you know, people who really do, you know, have not supported or do not support
Well,
ministry?
It's interesting. It's an interesting question. I know in Lincolnville there are two other churches of another denomination here. One is just beginning to I think going to be building a building soon. And someone said to me a couple of years ago, "Oh, Susan, aren't you concerned that so and so church is going to be building a church in Lincolnville?" And I said, "No, I'm not concerned at all." I said, "You know, we have a variety of churches here and in Maine and around the world, and we have the responsibility to choose the one that speaks most to what our faith tells us from Scripture and our lives, and so there's going to be differences, and I don't think that's a bad thing. All you have to do is read the Bible to find that out. there are many different ways to go, and so I don't think it's if people, you know, I'm sure there are probably people in our area who say, oh, they're preaching things that we wouldn't preach in our church up there on that church in the center. Well,
right.
that's true, and there are things that they're preaching that we wouldn't be preaching. So
right.
It's that freedom to make your own choices as to how you think we should behave as people of God. And I'm not in a position to tell someone else how they ought to behave, and we don't try to do that in our church.
Yes, no, I understand, and it's
yeah.
all grist for the mill when,
yeah.
You know, folks are basically brothers and sisters
mm-hmm.
In the same town
mm-hmm.
and having to work out things as
yep.
yep. as family.
Yep, and we do
in this way.
We do occasionally do some efforts together. I know we do a Thanksgiving dinner here and work in conjunction with one of the other churches and the women's club, and we all work together. I really say a lot. You know, we may not agree on all issues, but we can certainly come together and share a meal. We can have a song. We can pray. We can be in silence together. We can do good work in the community. We don't necessarily all have to agree on every single aspect of what it means to be a person of faith.
Mm, thank you, Susan. You know, we're about halfway through the program
okay.
already.
Wow.
And I just want to... It moves fast, doesn't it? I'm just going to take a break for a
okay.
moment.
All right.
You are listening to the Godspeed Institute on the Progressive Radio Network. We're going to take a short break. But after the break, we'll continue our exploration into the United Church of Christ with Reverend Dr. Susan Stone Street. And speaking of the mid-80s, here is a song, Becoming More True, every year, Harvest for the World. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm your host, Carol Hallenbeck. That was the Power Station, Harvest for the World. Half of us are satisfied, the other half in need. Didn't take me for a Power Station fan, perhaps. But we're talking about the United Church of Christ with the Reverend Dr. Susan Stone Street. Now, you say you've been a minister in this parish for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any particular parish moments or pastoral memories that stand out in your memory that you might want to share with us?
Yeah, there's one in particular I would like to share because I've been thinking about it because it really did have an impact on me. And this happened in my second or third year as a pastor of the church, and one of our members, her little granddaughter, came to church with her and with her daughter. Our member has since died, but that Sunday she came to church with Abby, who was at that time about 3 and a half. And we came out of church, after church, and we were standing on the front porch in the sun, and Abby looked up at me and said, "Are you God?" And I bent down and I asked her again, I said, "What did you say, Abby?" And she said again, "Are you God?" Well, I wasn't the only adult who was then standing there in tears on the front porch. And I thought very quickly, and I said, "No, Abby, I'm not God, but I'm a friend of God's, and so are you." And she said, "Oh." Abby's about 13 or 14 now. But right then, I understood the responsibility I had assumed in answering the call into ministry. I have to behave as I believe Jesus would want me to behave, and that is to serve as to the best of my ability as a bridge to the holy for young and old, and to the best of my ability and faith to understand and to remember to be very humble in my role as a pastor of a small rural church, because you never know when a three-year-old is going to say, "Are you God?" And wow, that's a major responsibility.
Yes, what a great story. Thank you. So then from there, from your perspective, what would you say, I mean, in today's world, which can appear increasingly fragmented and accelerating at all manner of speed in different ways, what is the role, from your perspective, of the church in contemporary culture?
Well, it seems to me that the role of the church in the culture today is to, as my secretary said many years ago, to pay attention. The oldest member of our congregation, who is 93, always says that to me too. "Susan, we people just need to pay attention." And what that means is to pay attention to who isn't at the table. Who isn't at the table for the good life? Pay attention to those whose lives are filled with difficulties and hardships and injustice and inequality. Pay attention to those who are shunned and ignored and chastised and forgotten. Pay attention and welcome them all to God's table, because I do believe there is a place at God's table for all of us. Too often when I read and hear the news of the world, I believe a lot of people forget to pay attention to this call of God through the life and ministry and death of Jesus, and others who have come to show us all that the way to the good life and the Spirit is to pay attention, because I do believe that Spirit hovers over all of us, no matter who we are.
But what you're describing is quite different from what many people might think about church, that most churches focus on who is at the table and who should be at the table and who fits, as it were, and, you know, forward facing the altar rather than looking outside the church toward each other and who's missing and who isn't there.
Yeah, and I think the UCC has a very definite focus on who isn't at the table. And if they're not at the table, we need to be inviting them in.
And who isn't at the table?
Who isn't?
You know,
I think people who have been discriminated against for many, many reasons, whether it be color or nationality or sexual orientation or because they don't have enough money or they're out of work, and some folks might think, well, you know, they could just pull themselves up by the bootstraps. I think all of those folks need to be invited to the table, and I know of a lot of UCC churches that are doing that. One of the UCC churches in Maine, the Hammond Street Church in Bangor, has an outreach ministry to folks who are on the street and in the prisons, and some of those folks are now coming to church on Sunday morning and participating,
and that's
a wonderful thing.
The parishioners are actually going out there, knocking on doors?
Yep, they are out knocking on doors and inviting them to come worship. And I think that's a really powerful statement of who we are and inviting people to the table who have not been invited before.
And now, in the sight of your personal experience and the change of heart, basically, and priorities that you experienced along your own personal journey, that basically gave the second part of your life a completely different direction.
Yes.
What does the church then offer today's seekers? And we're talking not just, you know, the increasing population of you know, the baby boomers and older, but young people, the kids, the teenagers who are, you know, plugged in all the time and texting all the time and not necessarily not paying attention. They probably are paying a whole lot of attention.
Yeah, yeah.
But what does the church offer?
It's a challenge, but I do think we offer lots of things. I think the UCC offers today's seekers a place to explore their faith or their lack of it. The sign on the front of our door says, all faiths welcome. I would prefer it even if it said all faiths, comma, or no faith welcome, to come and explore. It's a place to share in the study of the scriptures. It's a place to join with others in that hard work of bringing justice and equality to all people. And I think a lot of young people are very interested in doing some good, hard work in communities. They just don't want to sit in a pew and have somebody preach at them. So the more we can offer that, I think the better off we all are. I think we have we offer a place to be forgiven and to give thanks for the goodness of life. And a place to accept both the joys and the costs of discipleship, in our case, in the name of Jesus, but for the saving grace of all people, no matter who they are, or is our the slogan from the UCC, no matter who they are, where they are on life's journey, they're welcome here. And I think we do offer that to a lot of people. A statistic I've seen just recently, since 2009, I think it was, I think approximately 32,000 people have joined the denomination. We have about 1.2 million people in the denomination now. So I think we are a denomination in the midst of other denominations who are losing members. I think the UCC is picking up. I think we are offering some things that are giving people a place to explore and to ask questions without telling them what they ought to believe.
Well, and you mentioned an interesting point before about people who are not believers or perhaps not of a particular faith feeling somehow they would have no place. In a parish such as yours, but you know, just as we interview atheists here on the Institute, you invite people to struggle with their disbelief.
Absolutely.
As well, can you speak a little bit to that in our as far as our culture today?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that I do pretty much every Sunday is that at the end of my invocation, in the beginning part of the service, I will say, we come to you, O God, we invite you to be with us in the name of the one and the many you have sent to show us the way to new life. And I think it's very important that we be open to that revelation of good words, of the word, coming in many different forms. And I know we have several people in our church who are not official members, but they are very, very involved in our congregation, and I doubt that they would ever identify themselves as Christians, but they are very involved in our church and congregation and the work we do in the community. And to me, that's what's important. I really don't care whether you want to choose to call yourself a Christian or not. If you want to come and be involved and help do good work in the community and to bring people to the table who aren't there, that's all I think is important. I don't think putting labels on people and telling them they got to believe this or that is important.
So then, how would someone become a member in the United Church of Christ? What is that process?
Okay, you would be involved in an individual church, and what I do, I don't have a formal time of the year when we do that. I wait for someone to say to me, "Gee, Susan, I think I'd like to become an official member," and then I will announce that in church, and we'll have a couple weeks go by and see if anybody else at that point would like to do that, and then I have a session with them to talk about the United Church of Christ pretty much as we are and answer their questions. And then we bring them in on a Sunday morning, and there is a small part of the service where we, in essence, ask them questions, just a couple of questions about, you know, supporting the life and work of the church and the ministry of Jesus Christ in the world. And if they say I do to those, then they can be a member. And it's very simple. You don't have to go to class for 8 weeks. You don't have to, make major confessions where you're uncomfortable because we don't follow specific creeds, but we do have a statement of faith. You don't have to absolutely agree with everything. And we've gone from the time I've been here, when I started, we had 33 members. We have a little over 100 members now. And so that's a real broad range of people. We are in our church. We are a mixed bag of seekers. various political persuasions, economic status, religious preferences and backgrounds, sexual identities, social likes and dislikes. We are very diverse in our little town. I wish we had color. We are all white. To me, I think that's very unfortunate that we are all white. We are in a part of the country which is pretty much all white, and I think I'm sad about that. We need that aspect of our diversity to learn about others of different cultures. But other than that, we are very diverse in our understandings and appreciation of faith and what it means to be believers in God's message.
Yes, and all are invited to the table.
Absolutely.
Now, can you speak a little bit from a pastoral point of view?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And take your time,
mm-hmm.
the importance, the role, you know, of love, of tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned forgiveness before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you have particular anecdotes or stories involving these things, but the importance of tolerance in the world today and in the future that we're building.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share about
I don't have any specific incidences from the local church, but I was reading something this week from the most recent former president of the denomination, John Thomas, and he has a really interesting statement that related to the various aspects of the denominations that came together to form the UCC, and they really, really, I think, speak to that importance of love and tolerance and forgiveness. Coming from the evangelical background and history, it's that sense of piety and faith that's shaped by personal encounter with the gospel. We do feel personally involved. I think that certainly relates to love and tolerance and forgiveness. The congregational aspect reminds us of the centrality of the local church for all the work we do in the areas of discipleship and mission. Again, relates to the importance of love and tolerance and forgiveness. And the Christian connection is relating to the cherishing the simplicity of a commitment to Jesus, in following in the ways that Jesus lived and taught, and that's extremely important, again, for love, tolerance, and forgiveness, and that those things help us to come together to accomplish that. So I think that history is a way. I probably don't do as good a job in our church of reminding people of that as I should, because we come from a rich history where the importance of love and tolerance and forgiveness are just absolutely central to what we're doing, because we all make mistakes. Some days we're not very lovable ourselves, and some days we're not very tolerant, and so
yes,
it's an ongoing challenge and struggle, and we just keep on working at it.
Now, in addition to your regular services, mm-hmm. I also know that you have, for example, held services of healing and
mm-hmm.
reconciliation,
mm-hmm.
which include music, including
yes.
songs like Let It Be.
Yes, this coming Sunday we're going to do that.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah,
and that it's not only, even though in this modern age with
mm-hmm.
technology and media and
mm-hmm.
communication as we have it today,
mm-hmm.
that allows us, for example, to have this conversation right now.
Mm-hmm, yes.
You know, the outside world is no longer something very far away.
Right, right.
And even in a small, you know, country parish in New
mm-hmm.
England, I know the world at large really touches you deeply.
Yes.
And I believe you also perhaps had a special approach to a service, I think, the last time, for example, there were Jews and Muslims fighting in Gaza.
Ah.
Did you... Can you speak to
I'm not sure I know specifically what you're referring to there. In terms of the local church, you mean? I'm not. I have to say I don't have any particular recollection of something specific that you're referring to there.
Can we speak then to the what you mentioned before as political or peace efforts or interests in things happening around the world?
Yep.
So as far as healing and as far as tolerance and forgiveness, how does this apply then to the world at large?
Yeah,
because I think that's more the larger issue we're dealing with. Here, moving forward as people of faith, it's way beyond our backyard.
It is way beyond our backyard. And the UCC as a denomination has a number of formal relationships both with other churches, other Christian churches, as well as other faith groups around the world. Some of them, it's the United Church Board for World Ministries, the National Council of Churches, the World Council of Churches, the World Alliance of Reformed Churches. There are just a whole list of worldwide organizations with which the UCC is involved with. Some of them are ecumenical partnerships. One is between the UCC and the Christian Church, which is Disciples of Christ. And then there's the formula, it's called the Formula of Agreement among the UCC, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and the Presbyterian Church of the USA, and the Reformed Church in America, work closely together, and we have full communion with those denominations, which means that the ministers can transfer from one to the other to be serving a congregation. Some of those relationships go back to 17th century Holland, the Pilgrims, they go way back, and others are newer and are forming all the time. There are worldwide relationships with other religions. Some of those, I was trying to think if I could, common global ministries.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, there, and we have, you referenced the Jewish and Muslim communities. In 1987 and 89, the General Synod, which is the large board of the UCC, adopted resolutions reinforcing our commitments to reconciliation with the Jewish and Muslim communities. I don't have any specifics about that, but I know that that has been an ongoing activity. And then, of course, under the Justice and Witness Ministries, Covenant Ministry of the UCC, there are just a variety of programs that go on around the world. And individuals in each church can become as involved in any or all of those projects as their time and commitment allows them to be. It's very much ongoing and changing all the time.
So when the church says all faiths welcome, as it does,
do you mean
all faiths?
In our little church in Lincolnville, we do. That little sign has been on our church for many, many decades. My guess is, and we haven't been able to find any history for this, but my guess is that came up maybe in the early part of the 20th century when there weren't very many churches around, and the intention, my guess, was to say all Christians are welcome here. We don't care what denomination you are.
Right.
But I've just kind of pushed the envelope a little bit with that as being the pastor there to say, let's really say what we mean. Everybody's welcome here. We've had some Buddhists come. We've had some folks. We have several members. Well, we have a number of members who were former Roman Catholics, Episcopalians, Baptists, lots of different folks. And we like it that way.
Yes,
so,
thank you. Thank you for that. Susan, what do you perceive as challenges to the church today? And I'm not referring just to your parish, but of course I'm including that.
Yes.
But as, you know, as more at large as well.
Yeah. I have to say I think about that a lot. It's a big question, and it's one that both the denomination and I as an ordained minister in little rural church struggle with. But it seems to me that we're challenged by all the forces of society that entice people and really seduce them into believing they can find happiness in ways that don't really bring much happiness, whether it's material wealth or power sought in business or government or military might or through the idea that things and personal enjoyment will somehow bring happiness in the good life. And again, I see people not finding the good life in any of those things. Instead, they keep seeking them in places that only make them more thirsty for something that will make a difference in their lives. It took me until the age of 42 to discover I was looking in the wrong places to quench my thirst. And it's a challenge. It's a challenge to to try to deal with that. It comes down to things as simply in terms of having young people involved in church. So many sports teams do their practices and their matches on Sunday morning.
That's right.
Challenge for us to having young people be involved in the church because they're tied up with other activities on Sunday morning.
They must feel quite divided.
About
these things.
But
what you mentioned before is just so pertinent, and you yourself were living that life that you, previously, that it was exactly what you were supposed to be doing in our culture, you know, as a financial planner for American Express, but then found yourself perhaps not really equipped then to deal with what happened, where your values were with your parents and such, and from an experience of grief or loss, found you were, you know, born again, as it were, into a new life.
To a new life, and realizing that making a good living financially and playing golf on Sunday morning wasn't all there was.
Yes, that's the thank you. And also, you know, we're living in a culture that focuses so much on happiness, as you say, even prescribing it if need be. This must not allow or sort of discourages the journey that you made.
It does.
This focus on happiness, which would not necessarily create joy, which is something different.
No, and I find myself quoting Job to a lot of folks who are having difficult times. I love, I don't remember which verse it is, where he's gone through all these very hard and difficult things, and his wife says something like, you know, how can you believe in a God that would bring you all these bad things? And Job's answer is, am I to accept only the good in life? And I think that's very true, and I think sometimes people think they should only be getting the good, and that's just not life. Life is filled with goods and bads, with joys and sadnesses, and that is simply the way it is.
And we are and to there, be there that's where the fullness lies as well, and the learning and growth. If we try to, you know, suffering, a different kind of suffering happens when we try to eliminate the pain and the struggle and the emotion, you know, and in children, as is happening almost on an epidemic level here, it's necessary to feel these things.
Yes, it is.
And it's okay to stop. and re-examine your journey as you have, and you're a great example.
Well, you know, we just keep trying here and invite other people to come and try with us, and we laugh together and we cry together, and we just keep on going.
Now, as we come to the end of our show, we have a couple of minutes left. After all these years in ministry and your journey, Susan, is there one component of your faith that stands out for you that has your experience that has affected your own understanding and living of life in particular that you might want to share with the listeners?
Yeah. And I have to say it comes from the first piece of scripture that I learned in the early 1990s when my dad was laying in a rehab hospital in Sarasota, Florida. And I began to pay attention, and it was a poster on his hospital wall that was a quote from Hebrews 11, 1 through 3. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, and that what is seen was made from things not visible. Those verses changed my life. I had never read them before. I knew Hebrews was a book of the Bible, but I didn't know from what part. And my faith is grounded in the things that I hope for and the conviction of things I cannot prove. That just hit me over the head like a 2x4 when I first read those words. And, you know, I hope for goodness and peace for all people. And my great hope for myself personally is that in some way, somehow down the road, I will be reunited with my mother and father. You know, I don't know how that'll be, but that's my great hope. And I've come to understand that not all things in life can be proven scientifically. I've met people who've said, well, if you can prove it to me that it's real, then I'll become a Christian. And I have to say, nope, some things you have to accept as faith, and that's all there is to it. Because in the midst of it all, proven, unproven, I do believe God watches out for each one of us.
Thank you so much, Susan Stone Street. If people in the audience would like to learn more about you, about the UCC or other sources you were mentioning earlier, can you tell people where they can learn more?
Yes, you can go to www.ucc.org, and the UCC webpage is just filled with all kinds of wonderful resources and articles and history, and it's just it's rich with all kinds of things. If anyone's interested in our little church in Lincolnville, you can go to www.ucclincolnville, that's all one word, ucclincolnville.org, and find out more about our church. If folks are interested in things to read, I recommend the work of Frederick Buechner, Barbara Brown Taylor, Joan Chittister, any of those folks, or all of them, I think provide some really wonderful insights into faith and how to live a faithful life.
Thank you very much, Susan Stone Street, for being with us today. And it's been a wonderful and informative conversation, and I thank you for it from my heart.
Oh, thank you, Carol.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us for the Godspeed Institute today. If you would like to hear this or any of our previous shows again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. We hope you enjoyed the program and hope you will join us again as we continue to explore the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.